So we're at the point in the Kinnos where we transition from antiquity to modernity. That Tisha B'Av is not only a period to contemplate the tragedies of the Tu Bas HaMikdash, but all the tragedies that have occurred subsequent to that, any major national tragedy, because all of that has its source and its origin in the same place that the tragedy of Tisha B'Av has. And in turning to modernity and considering modern tragedies, even to our very recent history, I found this morning in reading the Kinnos, one of the most difficult things was to deal with the contrast between the lives described in the Kinnos at various different times in Jewish history, and so many centuries of Jewish history, and life today, where we have unprecedented comfort and affluence. Where we have not just affluence and comfort in the area of economics and social reality, but just even in the area of Torah, the amount of learning that's taking place, the yeshivas, the schools, the Bosse Medrash, the seminaries, the Jewish organizations, the restaurants and hotels, the Pesach programs that are available. It's probably unprecedented in Jewish history that we've ever had such access to such luxury, kashrus anywhere and everywhere. And it hasn't been that way for very long at all. This is all very recent. Even during the time that my brothers and I were learning in yeshiva, that wasn't that long ago, but life was different. And if you go back a little further than that, and you go back to life before the Holocaust and to Jewish life in Eastern Europe, how different was that? I remember my father telling us about his first visit to Reb Daniel Mofshevitz of Kelm, the famous Reb Daniel. And he had just come to yeshiva from South Africa. He was a young man from South Africa, and he came to yeshiva, and his uncle, Reb Elia, told him to visit with Reb Daniel. The first visit, he went to Kelm to stay there for a Shabbos, and he came to visit Reb Daniel on Shabbos afternoon for Shalashudas. But Reb Daniel had to apologize to him that the Shalashudas would have to subscribe or conform to the view of Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai says, if you haven't got food for Shalashudas, you can say Divrei Torah, you can learn. And that's as good as having a Shalashudas. And Reb Daniel said, I'm sorry, I don't have any food for Shalashudas. I couldn't afford a third meal. That was how they lived. A question of, can you manage to afford a Shalashudas? When my father wanted to buy a sefer, he had to go without food for several one meal a day for several weeks to collect enough money to be able to buy a sefer. Today we can get them online free, or we can get them for very little in a bookstore. So we're living in a very different environment, and with that environment comes a lot of responsibility. I worry so much. What will we say to the Rabbeinu Shem when he says, that's how the Jews have lived? You've just read Kinnos. That's how Jews have lived for centuries, for a lot of time during those centuries, and never ever have they lived like we live. What have you done with it? What have you made of yourself? The great Reb Daniel didn't have money for Shalashudas, but he became the great Reb Daniel. What are you becoming? And you've got everything at your fingertips, whatever you want. No shortage of anything. It's a great responsibility that we have. But Tisha B'Av is not a time to focus on our great accomplishments and our wonderful life is today. Tisha B'Av is a time to focus on our loss. And I'm going to speak to you today about a particular loss. And that is the loss of Lithuanian Jewry. Not of Eastern Europe as a whole, I'm talking specifically of Lithuania. And what it is that we lost. So Lithuania was always, in growing up as a child, Lithuania was like a fairy tale place. My father used to describe it to us, and he would talk very graphically about it and about the people there, but we couldn't go there. It was behind the Iron Curtain. It was part of the Soviet Union, so there was no possibility of going. It wasn't like it is today where you go to Israel and you can see the Kotel, and you know that's where the Beis HaMikdash was. And you can go to Beit Lechem, and you know that's where Rochel's burial place is. And you can go to Hebron, and you know that's where the Maras HaMachpeh, you can see it. So the Tanakh becomes alive. We had these stories about Lithuania, but it could never become alive, and we never thought it ever would, because we could never go back to visit. Until a few years ago, I went back to visit, just to see, is it real? What's still there? My father, I know, had no desire to go back to visit because he thought everything was destroyed as it was. But for me, it was an opportunity to reconnect with something that had disappeared. And when I say that it's disappeared, it's not the learning methodology of Lithuania, because almost all of the serious learning that takes place in yeshivot throughout the world today is based and founded on Lithuanian learning methodology. So the Lithuanian learning methodology, perfected by the Vilna Gaon and then developed and evolved by his Talmidim, Reb Chaim Volozhiner, and then Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, and the Brisker Rov, and Reb Shimon Shkop, and those more recent, that method of learning has taken its roots throughout the Torah world. That we haven't lost. But what we've lost is the philosophy of Lithuanian Torah. We've lost the worldview of Lithuanian Torah, and that's the precious gem that's gone and gone forever. And I want to describe to you in the few minutes we have a little bit about what that worldview is that we've lost, what that philosophy is and why it's so important. And I'll start by telling you, when I spoke about this not long ago at another shul here in Los Angeles, I showed the group a picture of Talmidim of Reb Chaim Moshe Grudzinski and Reb Shimon Shkop. Reb Chaim Moshe Grudzinski was the chief rabbi of Vilna. He wasn't really, he was really the chief rabbi of the world. They appointed him that just because he was that. That's who he was. And Reb Shimon Shkop was the father of modern Rosh Yeshivas, the whole generation of subsequent Rosh Yeshivas, and the next generation of Torah leaders. Many of them were developed by Reb Shimon Shkop. So these are really great people. Their students were themselves massive Talmidei Chachamim. They were hugely knowledgeable and wise in Torah. They were people who could have held their own already, even as young men in their 20s and 30s, could have held their own at the head of any yeshiva in the world. And I showed the group the pictures of these young yeshiva boys. And I asked the group, what do you notice? And they immediately responded, no uniform, everybody's dressed differently, and they all look very cool and fashionable, and they have a nice kind of humorous look to their face, a little mischievous almost, their faces. They're the kind of people you want to walk up and talk to. Really interesting. And I said, and how does it compare with yeshiva students today? And they said, not so much. Now, that's really important, and it links into an event that happened quite a number of years ago with my daughter, who was very young at the time, was looking at such a photograph. And she said, I'm deeply disturbed by this photograph. And I said, why? She said, because if Charlie Chaplin was in that group, I wouldn't know which one he was. What is it about? They don't look like anything different from Charlie Chaplin. They dress the same way. They got the same kind of hat. They look the same. So I said, that's a great question. Bring a picture of Charlie Chaplin. Let's put them next to each other, which she did. And she peered at it and peered at it and peered at it. All of a sudden, her face broke out into a smile. And she said, the difference is in their eyes. That's very important. And that understanding leads into a really important principle as to what Lithuanian Jewry was. It's not just about fashion. Yes, they did dress very fashionably. That's the way that they wore hats, not because it was yeshivish to wear hats. They wore hats because it was fashionable to wear hats. That's why they wore hats, and they wore fashionable hats. And they wore fashionable suits, and they all wore ties, and that's the way they came to yeshiva every single day. Their shoes were brightly polished. They weren't allowed into the yeshivas if their shoes were not shiny. They looked good. Why was that so important? And the story that my father used to tell, it was so beautiful, that the main boulevard in Kovno, which I saw, it's beautiful, tree-lined with a two sides of the road and trees down the middle as well. And at the end of that road was the home of the Kovno Rov, the Dvar Avraham. And he lived in a very majestic home. And once a day, the Kovno Rov would take a walk down that boulevard. It was called the Leisvis Aleia. Still is called the Leisvis Aleia. And that was on the tourist agenda. When anybody came to Kovno, one of the tourist items was to go to the Leisvis Aleia at 2 p.m. or whatever time it was and watch the Kovno Rov take his stroll. And the streets were lined with goyim. Like when the queen goes out in the carriage, people come to look. People came to Kovno to see the Kovno Rov take a walk. That's how beautiful and majestic it was. Can you imagine that today? Other than Rabbi Cohen, if you could imagine others, there are not many who could walk down Pico Boulevard and the streets would be lined with people just to look at the sight of this great human being. It's not in the way they dressed, it's in the eyes and the way they conducted themselves. And it really reveals three essential qualities about Lithuanian Jewry. The first one is, we know very well the differences between kosher and treif. We look for an OU, it's kosher, there's no OU, it's not kosher, or maybe it's treif. We know about kosher and treif. But in Lithuania, there was something even more important than kosher and treif. And that was kodesh and chol. Sanctity and secular. And the level of sanctity is what was really important. Now, the difference between kosher and treif and kodesh and chol is that with kosher and treif, how do you know if something's kosher or treif apart from the OU? There's always a siman. It's got a cloven hoof, it chews the cud, it's got scales. There are always external signs that let you know if something is kosher or treif. But kodesh and chol, there are no signs. When Titus entered the Beis HaMikdash, the Kedusha removed itself. There was no longer any sanctity in the Beis HaMikdash, but it looked the same. And when we say HaMavdil ben Kodesh L'chol, as we'll say tonight, that's to be able to understand the difference between Kodesh and Chol, although there's no external manifestation, there's no empirical evidence that something is either Kodesh or Chol. How do you know whether it's Kodesh or Chol? It's in the eyes. It comes from inside. Kedusha comes from deep inside. It doesn't come from the outside. And so in Lithuania, the focus was on Kedusha, not on kashrus. Of course everything had to be kosher. Of course people were meticulous. And I don't want to make it sound as if Lithuania was perfect. There was a lot going on in Lithuania that was far, far from perfect. I'm just talking about the yeshivisha world in Lithuania and what that was producing. And their kedusha is what was important. Sanctity was important. Avram Yeshua Heschel wrote a book called The Earth is the Lord's. Well worth written. It's a small little book. It's poetic. It's beautiful. And it's about the inner world of the Lithuanian Jew. It's that inner world. Lithuania was about the inner world. It wasn't about the outer world. It was all about the inner world. And that's why you could dress like Charlie Chaplin. It didn't matter. You looked fashionable. But if you looked in the eyes, you saw Kedusha. If you looked in the face, you saw Kedusha. When you saw the Dvar Avrom walking down the Lysbos Aleia, you saw Kedusha. And even non-Jews were able to pick that up and were able to sense that. So the first is the idea of Kedusha. The second is the idea of Esek HaTorah. Esek HaTorah is, we say the bracha every morning, La'asok b'divrei Torah. Esek HaTorah means literally, as the Taz and the Bach say in Simon Mem Zayin, it's really about making Torah your business. And what does that mean, making Torah your business? That is, you know, there's some people for whom Torah is just a cultural thing. And there's some people for whom Torah is a hobby. You go to shul, you go to a shir, you come to shul on Tisha B'Av, you say kinnis, it's a hobby. So like you do, you follow your sports team, you do these things. And then there's some things for whom Torah is a religious experience. And you do certain religious things. So you go to the same thing, you go to shul, you do, and you have a shir, you learn. But that's not Esek HaTorah. Esek HaTorah is when you measure your value as a person by the depth of your understanding of Torah and the breadth of your knowledge of it. That's what determines who you are. There's nothing else that determines who you are. It's not about money, and it's not about status, and it's not about popularity. It's just about where you're holding in your learning. That was Lithuania. That was the only thing that was important. That was the only thing that determined status. And we've got in the beginning of Medrash Eicha, appropriate for today, that when Yirmiyahu discusses what it is that caused the destruction of the temple, and Yirmiyahu says, "V'isi ozovu ves toirosi lo shamoru," they've abandoned me and they've not kept the Torah. They've not kept to studying the Torah. And the Medrash says Hashem is saying through Yirmiyahu, "I would have been glad if they would have abandoned me, provided they'd carried on making Torah their business." Because mitoicha you misaskin bo, since they would be deeply involved in the understanding and learning of Torah, hamor shabo machzirin lemutov, the inner power, that inner energy, the kedusha of Torah would bring them back onto the right track. It says God, I don't need the frumkeit, I don't need the religiosity, just stay attached to the Torah because then you'll come back right. Don't give them both up. And that was in Lithuania. Not that there wasn't religiosity; they were extremely pious people generally. But what's important was, the real essence was their deep involvement in an understanding and love of the learning of Torah. And the third and perhaps the most important of all was, as Micho says, and the Gemara brings it at the end of Makkos and in Sukkah, the Gemara brings that Micho reduced the 613 mitzvahs to three, and one of the primary ones of the three elements of all the mitzvahs is v'hatznei leches im Hashem Elokecha. The idea of doing things bitznius. Now today when you use the word tznius, you think it has to do with women's fashion. But it's not. Tznius is a characteristic. It's a character trait. It's the way you operate. And tznius means that anything that doesn't have to be visible shouldn't be visible. Don't make things visible if they don't have to be visible. And that was crucial in Lithuanian Jewry. Rabbi Elia Lopian, my great uncle, said that anybody who saw Rabbi Yisrael Salanter even for a moment would be permanently transformed. And I've heard that said by many other people at the time as well. If you saw Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the founder of the Musa movement, even for a moment, your life would be transformed. And my father asked his uncle, did you ever see Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and was your life transformed? He said, yes, it was a turning point in my life. I did see Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. I was a little boy. And my father took me to a place where Rabbi Yisrael would be so that I could see him. But he was far away and I could only see him from the back. And my father said, so what was transformative if that's all you could see? He said, what transformed me was he looked like an ordinary businessman. Isn't Rabbi Yisrael Salanter looked like an ordinary businessman? The difference is not in what they wore, it was in the eyes, in the words, in the conduct. That was Lithuania. And we see that represented in one of the Vilna Gaon's opening remarks on the Shulchan Aruch. The Vilna Gaon, kind of the founder, the father of Lithuanian Jewry, and certainly from a learning perspective, writes at the beginning of the Shulchan Aruch, when the Ramo says, on the Shulchan Aruch's opening of when you get up in the morning, Yitgaber Kairi, you must be as powerful as a lion to do the will of Hashem. And the Ramo says, and not to worry about what people think about you and people mock you and people laugh at you. You just do what's right and you go forward. Says the Vilna Gaon on that. Af shelo yevosh. Yes, you're right. Don't be embarrassed by what people think of you. Mikol makom. Nevertheless, kol ma sheyaseh behatzneah. If you can avoid other people even seeing it, adif, that's even better. There's no mitzvah to go and make yourself visible to attract the mockery of others. Anything you can do, not out of embarrassment. The reason to hide it is not out of embarrassment. It's just because in Lithuanian Jewry, the idea was anything that was external could become the motivator of behavior. The way you want to be seen, the way you want to be perceived, the image you have in the world. And that was removed from Lithuanian life. It wasn't about image. It was about kedusha. It wasn't about kashrus. It was about what's inside. It was about kedusha, the levels of sanctity that you were able to achieve within you. That's what it was really all about. And that's the meaning of hatsneya. Hatsneya is anything that doesn't have to have material manifestation. Keep it in the interior. Keep it internal. Because that's where it can really develop and that's where it can really grow without the interference of image, of how people perceive you and how they think of you. And that, when I talk about the loss of Lithuanian Jewry, the peace that I personally mourn, when I look with such admiration and excitement and delight at what's happening in the world of Torah, but as we said on Tisha B'Av, we look at the little things we're missing. And I look at that gem in the crown that's missing. The crown is beautiful, but where there used to be a Lithuanian gem, there's just a gap. That focus, that total focus on the interior, to the absence of anything else. The focus on kedusha rather than on religiosity. The focus on esika Torah, making Torah one's profession by which one measures oneself. And kol ma sheyaseh b'hatzneah, as the Vilna Gaon says, anything that you can possibly do privately, without others seeing, adif, is far preferable. Easy, fast.